Well, welcome to the audio podcast today. I have a friend of mine who is based up in, you're in Derby, aren't you?
I am in Derby, yeah.
Yeah, I quite like Derby actually. And this gentleman is called Tim Elliott, and he's a marketing expert. He's actually a Virgin startup mentor as well, which I find hugely interesting. And I know you used to do a bit of work with the you hate me talking about it, but you used to be a tutor for the Chartered Institute of Marketing as well. And I know you don't like to talk about it, but I think it's good, because not a lot of marketers actually have studied classical marketing, especially in the digital space, you know.
Yeah.
And so today we're gonna just touch around the GDPR, because I know a lot of people are sort of worried about that. And also we will just try and talk about simplifying marketing, because I think that's a big thing, isn't it, really? People try and overcomplicate everything, and you know, me included, I overcomplicate things, and I've gone back to basics now. With GDPR, I think it gives everyone a chance to start again. And for anyone who doesn't actually know about GDPR, it's coming at the end of this month, and there are a lot of facets to it. I think the most important thing is what you do with people's data, and then obviously how secure that data is as well, and if you are willing to delete it as well, because as far as I can gather, you need to be able to say to someone, I want you to remove me from your database, and then actually they have to remove you and say to you, right, okay, you're removed completely, sort of thing. And I think Facebook are going to set the new standards when it comes to moving forwards with it, but you know, with the social space. But I think us people who are trying to build our mailing lists or email lists, I mean, and this kind of stuff, it actually makes it more relevant, doesn't it? It makes your emails more relevant, and it means that people who receive them actually want to read them. So what's your take on it then, Tim?
Oh God, GDPR, hey, who invented that? It's such a massive kind of grey area and change for people, but it shouldn't be as massive a change for people as it will be, because it's been easy to not email market properly for a long time. To not worry about consent, especially here in the UK. I can't speak for other bits here, but here in the UK, if you're not opted out, you're opted in. And there's a lot of tools that allow you to scrape your LinkedIn contacts and upload them to your email list. That's not consent, but people have done it for donkey's years.
I'm guilty.
Yeah, everybody's done it. Everybody's done it. That's not good. But you know, there's stuff like that have allowed us to be not kind of, I don't want to say lazy, I don't want to say bad marketers, but do like a little shortcut here and there.
Yeah.
That are, you know, are on the rounds of it. So GDPR is just a reiteration, a reconfirmation of how we should be doing it anyway. We should have the consent of people we email. That's not news particularly. And we should have, you know, be able to prove that we store data securely.
Mm-hmm.
That's not kind of new news, really.
Yeah.
It's just a shock for a lot of people who've had, you know, either bad advice or just gone the wrong route, or had somebody internally that have added stuff. You know, look at networking, right? The traditional version of B2B marketing, right? You get business cards from networking or attendee lists or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can stick them in your email list and start emailing those sort of people. That's not kind of necessary consent, but I mean, there's a few golden rules that you've got to understand with GDPR. Now, a big caveat, I'm not a GDPR guy, I'm just a marketing guy.
Me either.
Communications.
Yeah.
Communications is an important part of marketing. So you've got to get consent, right? You've got to have and be able to prove consent of somebody that you're emailing about the thing, right? Which is either through double opt-in, through previous things, that sort of thing. But you must must have kind of consent. If it's B2B, you can have legitimate interest, which is a grey area, if I'm honest.
Right.
But if, like, you could try and prove legitimate interest. So, so if we take like HubSpot, for example, and I download an ebook off HubSpot and, and swap them my email address for this ebook.
Yeah.
Right. Once they've emailed me that ebook, they've fulfilled the purpose. So in technically, black and white, technically, they don't have then my consent to email because they've fulfilled the purpose of that. However, legitimate interest says that if I'm interested in this ebook, I'm also interested in X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Like if I'm a holiday company and I sign up for a holiday newsletter and I book a holiday, in theory, they've got legitimate interest to sell me holiday insurance. Do you know, it's kind of that onward thing that you should start to think, but it's just a kind of a mindset of starting to think where that is. And then there's the whole cookie policy situation for people's websites. We can't just say now that we have cookie policies. Do you know what I mean? We have cookies on a website, we're tracking some stuff. We've got to be expressly clear of what we're tracking and what we're using that data for.
Yeah.
So AdWords and analytics are ones that, and Facebook ads maybe are the main ones that 90% of people that will use. So we've got to understand what those data sets are and what are they used for.
Yeah. I was having a little poke around actually my Google Analytics earlier. It's a very interesting thing to be using to get your content right. It's fascinating, really. If you want to build a news site, Google Analytics is amazing, really. Yeah. You know,
yeah, and there's a whole host of tools that support that as well. You know, like answerthepublic.com is incredible.
Like, really?
It just gives you the questions that people ask Google related to a keyword or key phrase, which is pretty much blog title, right? And it's an incredible tool. And the guy looks like I do in about 20 years. on the site. You have to check it out, answerthepublic.com. It's incredible.
Cool.
But there's a whole roast of, things like that. And then, you know, I think the best way to look at GDPR is to have it as an opportunity, really.
Yeah.
You know, I've had an opportunity to have a bit of a clear out.
Yeah.
Like a few of my mates in marketing that have Infusionsoft and such like have checked their list and say they've got a, you know, 4,000 people list, which is quite a decent size for a normal small business, you know.
Yeah.
If 1,500 of those have never opened your email in the last 6 months, it's probably safe to say they're not going to open it again. So
exactly.
You may as well get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the ones who are engaged, the ones who are reading your email are the only people you want on it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I agree completely. I've been doing a bit of testing myself around this because I did my LinkedIn export, got all the emails. They've changed it so now you don't get the actual physical addresses. You used to get the physical address and all sorts of other data, but now it's just email, name, job title, business. So I literally just pulled it out and combined it with a few other lists, and I've been sending out just some blast campaigns, which, you know, and I had a few people unsubscribe, a few people reported me, you know, doesn't really bother me too much. Cause I wanted to just give people a bit more brand awareness of me. Cause I'm going to be starting to use LinkedIn a lot more because I think that's going to open up an opportunity, isn't it? Really? So I'm kind of doing the thing of when Al Pacino sat in the restaurant and he goes, "Say good night to the bad guy." Do you remember that? Have you seen that bit? Yeah. So it's a bit like that, really, as far as that's concerned. So I'm gonna do another two or three of those before the GDPR date comes in, and then I'm gonna delete everything. I'm gonna delete everybody's details, which is that's what you're talking about in essence, aren't you? Deleting the data because
you need to be able to properly delete it. I mean GDPR specifically is for consumer data. Right, so personal email addresses.
Exactly.
Like for example, my LinkedIn email is my Gmail.
Yes.
Right, because I have a Gmail address that just folds it off. So not many people have that. So if you have done that tactic, you have to be careful that emailing the personal emails mm-hmm. is more
intrusive.
more against GDPR
right.
than the B2B emails.
Yeah.
But B2B emails are the tricky area for GDPR because it's what's in the public domain.
Exactly.
But there's a whole gamut of conversation about what concept, what is a personal data, right? So
yeah.
if it's tim@joeblogslimited.com, mm-hmm. right? Some people say that's all
yeah.
company data. Some yeah. people are saying, well, the Tim at is personal data. You mm-hmm. can email info at, so you can't yeah. email Tim at, you can only info email at.
Yeah.
There's this whole thing, right? And I don't know what the answer is. And I'm yeah. sure it will come to fruition. And I'm pretty sure that GDPR people don't know what the answer is until they've figured it out.
Well, very much so. I mean, I think it's kind of like people need to work towards a standard. It's not like, oh, hold on, we're the GDPR police. We're going to come and arrest you on the 25th of May. Yeah. Yeah. But even so, I mean, I was talking to Jason at Creation Agency yeah. a few weeks back, and he was just saying that, you know, you need to just make the data that you do have anonymous. So it's like it's actually a persona that you're a segment yeah. that you're actually going for versus, you know, the actual name and stuff like this. So that's what he yeah. was saying in B2B. I mean, B2C is a big headache for people, I'm sure. Hence why yeah. I would imagine Wetherspoons deleted everything, which made me laugh. I mean, I think, oh, you know, all these people were on Facebook, you know, were kind of like, oh, Wetherspoons, oh, he's done this and that. And actually, personally, I think it's a fantastic thing that he's done. I think that if you look at the amount of responses that he was getting from people, you know, people are sick of seeing a pint of beer on a Wetherspoons account. Do you know what I mean? And actually, I respect the guy for doing that. At least he's had the sort of impetus to stand up and say, do you know what? I don't actually think people are vaguely interested. They just, if they want us, they do a Google search. They look at the menu. They go to the pub, right? They don't actually need social media accounts. They're wasting the manager's times. And if you look at the lean way Wetherspoons is run, yeah, you know, they don't have time to be checking all these things because they're multitasking, aren't they? So it's a big, big time suck. And I just thought, do you know what? Good on you, really. That was my attitude.
I mean, it's definitely a ballsy decision, if I'm honest. But we were having about conversations around that time when that happened, people asking, like, the future of social media and stuff like that. But A, Wetherspoons did social media poorly.
Yes, that's true.
If I'm honest. So yeah. it won't make any difference.
No.
It's better not to do it than do it badly.
Yeah.
They had terrible feedback and there was other stuff, not to yeah. go down this route, but there was
reputation management.
His Brexit supporting and stuff like that, which, yes. do you know what I mean? It's probably best off it. And the clientele of Wetherspoons don't care if he tweets or not, if
no.
I'm honest.
No,
I'm pretty sure they don't.
So, they're not bothered.
No, and I think they know their market and they know how to get to them. Mm. They're a very successful business, whether you like them, whether you don't like them.
I fly the flag. I think you know what you're going to get when you go there. Usually, yeah, all right, they might burn the toast, yeah, occasionally. Sure. But, you know, it is very well-run business. And, you know, I mean, they're down at Port Solent at the yacht, right by the yachts, you know, and people get off their yachts, you know, £500,000, £200,000 yacht and go to Wetherspoons. It's like, you know, so what? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think it'll make any difference. And you know, it's kind of a data thing, isn't it? Again, it's how they know how to reach their customers, right? So it's a back to the fundamental basics of marketing, like you referred to Jason, really. You know,
yeah.
what you're trying to achieve as a company or a campaign or whatever it is, who you need to reach in order to fulfill that campaign and what the best kind of channels is to reach them. You don't have to do all the channels. You don't have to do all the stuff. That's why email is so important, especially after GDPR, because if they're going to bother kind of linking up with you, connecting to your list or whatever,
yeah.
if they're bothered to do that, then they're worthy of hearing it. And you don't know what state Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn data is going to be, you know, with organic reach declining and stuff like that. You don't know where it's going to be.
No.
Especially with, you know, even messaging apps now, like WhatsApp and Messenger are the next big things. You know, they've got over 1 billion users all the time, but we can't access their data.
No.
So, you know, doing stuff like that and segmenting properly and using this as an opportunity to just get your house in order, just have a spring clean, start doing something properly from now.
Yeah.
May as well give it a go. I mean, Jason's absolutely right. One of the tools I use for segmentation and personalization is a thing called the four pillars of segmentation, which is a great little thing. And there's, to the left of it, there's the normal data. So age, family, gender, location, all the traditional data we've always been used to have.
Yeah.
But we may now not have that data or permission to use it.
Right.
So it all goes on to the other side, right, which is behavioural and digital body language and that sort of thing. So trends and activities and channels and preferences and personality and positions in the buying cycle and stuff like that. That's all coming in now. And we've got super tech like IBM Watson. Do you know what I mean? For example, big shout out to Jeremy Waite for what he's done on that sort of stuff. But
it's amazing.
That sort of stuff is allowing us to find that data. And there's a million tools.
Loads.
To market better now.
Yeah, there are absolutely loads. And all of these people who are complaining about Facebook and the data Facebook has, it's like, well, actually, that's probably not even half the quality of actually targeting that you can do using other adverts. I mean, I was just speaking to a friend of mine recently, and he runs something which is a online advertising platform. He's just signed up the Publicis group with that, and unbelievable the targeting that this thing does. And also it's actually got dynamic content generation. So it will take one image and then it can actually just overlay text over that image automatically. So you're not having to do 5,000 different creatives. You can just do one creative and then just do, and it does automatically the text fitting the people, you know? And it's like, if you're going to use your mobile phone and you're going to use an app, yeah, and you don't read the permissions of that app, then tough, I'm afraid. That's what it is. You've just, you want everything for free, right? Like, you want to go on Facebook for free. Oh, well, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter and I give away my life and all my data. Well, it's like, well, pay for your services then is my attitude.
I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, my wife, God bless her, was one of the people surprised by the Facebook Cambridge Analytica thing, right? Because she was like, I can't believe they've taken all my data. And I kind of said to her in the nicest possible way, because she's my wife,
that
you don't think people really wanted to know what your unicorn name was, did you? Because, come on, seriously? That's not what they're after, is it?
Well, exactly.
Got a database wanting to market to people whose unicorn name is Twinkly Toes. It's just not a thing. But I think it just shows that people, like the shallow level of social interactions, are at that face level, right? If you scratch them, there's like people are just there for that kind of reason. That simple, non-thinking, no in-depth researchy stuff.
Yeah.
They just want to know what their unicorn name is and then share it with their mates and see what their unicorn is. Do you know what? It's just, I don't know. You can't vouch for people particularly, I think. Do you know what?
Well, it's a funny old world, isn't it? You know, and people don't actually realise the why of why they're addicted. Why are they picking up this and hitting this endorphin rush? Like, why, you know, why are they doing it? What? And they don't understand that they're actually seeking the hormones in the brain, and they don't get it. It's been designed very well. Let's put it like that, you know. And I'm trying to stay away from my smartphone as much as possible. And I only just installed Facebook Messenger on it again for like about 10 days ago because I had some problems with security and stuff like this. To the point where I don't share any links via Facebook Messenger to, so say we're having a Zoom, right? I wouldn't send you a link via Facebook Messenger because Facebook is totally unsecure, right? And in fact, when people go onto your Messenger, they can get into your phone quite easily to the point of they can get into the network where you are quite easily from this device to your router to your laptop. And I had it happen to me. I was doing a security interview with someone, very, very high profile security expert. Yeah. I stupidly accepted a friend request from him about 2 or 3 days later. Right. It wasn't him. And my website got completely hacked, yeah, immediately. Within 2 minutes of me clicking accept, yeah, something went into my phone. It located my router, which at home, obviously, people don't go for internet secure routers usually. And then it went straight into my website, which I was using on my other device in the back end of it, and boom, killed it. Yeah, so I've got an online backup system, rolling 30-day backup. I know how to get the FTP files. I know how to do the database. So that is what I say to people. If no one's watching, I just stuck up my two fingers. but you know, back to the GDPR thing.
Yeah,
you've also got internet hosts, right? And the internet host actually runs their own diagnostics, their own security. Yeah, so you might want all these cookies, you might want to know what's going on, and it's like, well, actually, if you want to protect your website, you need to use some of these cookies and actually track people's IP addresses so that you can block them from trying to hack your site. And it's like there are all these complexities of this GDPR, and actually I think it's a good step forward. I'm giving it a yes. Thumbs up. Yeah. Yep. But yep. For me as an individual blogger on my website, I write articles, right? It's not something I'm going to be too fussed about. I'm just building a mailing list. As long as I get a double opt-in for my mailing list, right? And I've got a privacy policy that's on there that people can read that says, if you want your data, you can pay me £10. I'll tell you what data I've got on you, right? And I will quite happily send that to people. Not a problem. All it will be is a name and an email. Because as far as I'm concerned, as far as that 25th of May is concerned, I will delete all of the information that I hold on people and just build that mailing list like that, really. But in terms of actually a CRM and business data and actually doing B2B, you know, person-to-person marketing, I think it's probably going to be more within the platforms themselves, like LinkedIn and stuff, right? Or are you actually, so let me give you an example. Say I've never met you before, right?
Yeah.
But I know of you and I've seen you and we're a LinkedIn connection. Am I allowed to export your data and put that into my CRM knowing who you are? Or is that now illegal for me to do that?
Again, it's a grey area. 90%, you're not allowed to do it. 10%, if it was my work email, it'd be in the public domain anyway,
right,
on my website, and mm-hmm. therefore you could have accessed it anyway.
Right.
But I haven't consented to give you the email. But this may not be the verbatim way of doing it, but what I've been advising to do, like if you're communicating with somebody, or it's your initial thing of communication is in Facebook or in LinkedIn.
Yeah.
See, that's the native home of that relationship. Like if your data is in LinkedIn, like you can upload, you can do like custom audiences on Facebook, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. As long as you don't remove that data from there, it's Facebook and LinkedIn's problem.
Yes.
There's loads of smart marketing ways, not even smart marketing ways, quite simple marketing ways of getting in touch with somebody and producing good content and just having a conversation with somebody within the platform.
Exactly. And then you just drop them.
You can always take that off. You can always take that offline. You can always go, is it all right if I give you an email? You don't have to sign them up to your newsletter.
Exactly. Exactly. That's their prerogative.
Can I send you this by the, you know, they're not going to refuse that, or they shouldn't. It's all it's all the stuff that people haven't requested. Or if you're being spammy, then people are going to complain about
Look, I can't help it, man. I'm really sorry. Please forgive me. I'm going to go to church on Sunday and I will say a prayer for that. I will ask for mercy. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm a spammer.
But people do that, right? People do that because it's easy to do. And you know, that's where the whole marketing wider picture comes in. Because marketing's not super complicated. Do you know what I mean?
But then it goes to the kind of, do you want to go for mass volume of contacts, or do you want to go for targeting? And I personally think go for targeting every time, really.
100%.
And that's what this GDPR is doing. You know, I'd rather just, like we were talking about it a few weeks back, you know, and it's just like you go and approach one person and you say, hi, how are you? I'm Tim. do you want to do some business? I've noticed you've got a problem and I can help you. And they're like, well, what's that? And then, you know, and it's the same, isn't it, with the content? Because those people, if you encourage them to share that content with other people that they know, then that's going to help you to build a stronger knowledge of what that persona, you know, kind of wants, right? And that's what I'm trying to focus on by doing this recording here. I know that people who are going to listen to it are experienced marketers, maybe marketers who are just learning. Probably Jason will listen to it because we mentioned him, right? And his agency, you know. And I think it's quite fun, really, actually getting back to the basics and the roots of it all, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. That's 100% it. And yeah, that's a nail on the head. It reminded me of something when you just spoke, actually, a bit of a Seth Godin thing. And for those of you who know me, know I'm a bit of a Seth Godin fan. Like
me too.
Pretty much a lot of people are. But there's one of his things is called The First 10, right? And he says when you're going to ship something, so when you launch a campaign, when you sell a product, when you launch a service, the first 10 people you tell should be the 10 people who love it, and they will tell the people.
Right.
So if you spend your marketing time, your energies really focusing on finding the 10 people that are going to love this course that you're doing, this widget that you're selling, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and approach them individually, you get that right, you're done. Because you can find people like that. They'll tell people, they'll advocate people. And it's really simple targeting. It's back to, I mean, I don't know how old account-based marketing is, but it's
just sales, isn't it? It's what I used to do. But it's what I used to do back in the day. Literally, I would approach all sorts of different businesses, lots of different kind of tourist attractions and delis, farm shops and this kind of stuff. When I was selling very high quality niche products like, you know, liqueurs and stuff. And I would literally call them up and I'd say, oh, hi there, would you like some information, blah, 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 blah. And that, because we had a lot of brand awareness, they'd say, oh, okay then. So we sent them a letter with a business card, hand signed the letter. And then you call them up. Hey, can I make an appointment? Yeah, sure. See you next week. And like, it's just so simple, isn't it? You know, and it doesn't have to be complicated.
Doesn't have to be complicated. I mean, I've been in a process of simplification, or not simplification, maybe just filtering out stuff I don't like doing anymore, if I'm honest, for a while. And us marketers, right, especially the ones with a digital slant, right, have the ability to measure so much stuff that doesn't really matter.
Right.
Let's take the ones people know, the metrics people know, like impressions and reach and clicks.
Yeah.
Right. Impressions. I mean, they're just a number plucked out from a platform somewhere. Mm-hmm. Reach mm-hmm. is a little bit more valuable, but a little bit. And clicks is okay. It shows an indication if you're doing right. But none of those things we're in control of. Right. So why do we spend all that energy measuring stuff we're not in control of? So a guy I know recommended I use a thing called proactive metrics, which is my favorite thing from the last year.
Okay.
You only measure stuff that you're in control of, that you know moves your business forward. So the only metric I measure is conversation started. So whether it be a tweet, whether it be a Facebook, a LinkedIn, an in-person one, a phone call, don't mind. But it's conversation started, because I know the more conversations I have, the further forward my business goes.
Very much
and
so.
You focus back on the relationship and having that depth of relationship. And you don't, I think Patricia Phipp said it well, like you don't close a sale, you open a relationship. But if you think in that kind of, and Seth Godin's all over that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That like the long tail of a business relationship. That
Very much stuff. So.
You know, if you focus on that, you're there to build that every time.
Yeah.
You know, then the reach and the impressions and the clicks don't really matter. They come because you do good stuff. They're a result of doing something else.
Of course. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not a thing that you should be measuring. You should be going, I need to send 14 emails a week, but make them awesome. So people share them and people click on the links that I've got in it.
Yeah.
The clicks and the link, that you can't just send 14 emails and then go, oh, well, it reached quite a lot of people, because that doesn't mean anything, make any difference.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
You do the stuff well that will build the relationship, and clicks and reach impressions will go up as a result of it.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Jason's big into clicks. Yeah, because that's what IBM and all of those guys want, you know. But they actually do track the conversions as well, and the conversation opening, you know, is definitely crucial. It's crucial.
I think in context, you know, that's you can prove like clicks are important. Let's say on a Facebook ad campaign, right? You measure the clicks from the ad to the landing page.
And then
the conversions of the landing page, right? You know, if you're getting really good clicks but no conversions, there's something wrong with the landing page.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it's not ideal, but you know, if you need to know that sort of thing, it's an impression of something doing well. We know because the clicks are good from Facebook to the landing page, and the landing page is not converting well. We need to do the landing page better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's not rocket, like no one's clicking through on there.
Yes, but then it depends, doesn't it? That also could depend on the type of people that you're targeting, because you might be targeting the wrong advert to the right people, you know.
I mean, Facebook's really good at advertising, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's their job, and it's their AI's job to optimize their ads. You know, if you've run Facebook ads, you know that it takes a while for Facebook to learn who to give it to in order for them to get more money from you. You know, so there's all that sort of thing. Facebook are really good at that. Doesn't mean the product you're selling is any good or is suitable.
Right.
It just means you're really good at Facebook ads.
Do you know, yes.
And there's still that whole product market fit stuff, it's where the CIM bit comes in, right? A product market fit, positioning and the placement and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes in.
Yeah.
That people forget. You know, because it's easy to do Facebook ads and they think that's all the marketing. But if you forget the other stuff, there's holes. And if there's holes, stuff will fall into it if you leave a hole there. You know,
well, of course. Yeah, I mean, of course, because people might buy a product once, they might not buy it again. And that's the biggest problem with the way that you can get people to buy things. But if you're not looking at, because you're big into the customer journey, aren't you?
Sure.
And that kind of stuff, the experience and stuff. And if you're not sort of tailoring your product to fit those people right, and you're not following up with the feedback and then trying to make the product better and the service better, then it's kind of like you can do all you want, you know, but it's amazing actually to see what's going on in the world now. I get lost because so many new developments happen that it's quite a bizarre thing. But I'm quite pleased we're going back to the basics, Tim. I think it's going to be a lot more fun. I think that I think that actually mail is going to come into the play a lot more. I'm right into mail. I think that people, everyone says, "Oh, digital mail is dead," and blah blah blah. It's just rubbish. I think if you get the mailing right, you know, you could be laughing. But I mean, before we go, I'm going to tell you a funny story, right? Excuse me if I absolutely just laugh my face off. Yeah. Because every time I tell this story, I can't stop laughing. Yeah. But so when I worked at my family business, I was there for quite a few years actually. And we decided we were going to do a mail merge one week, and we were going to put this, let me see. He was actually on a gap year. This chap, he was called Michael, quite a posh chap. And he got into university, but he was taking a year out in the middle. So we decided we were going to get him to send out this mail merge, right? And to all the customers. So, I mean, we didn't have a massive list. It was only probably a few thousand. And so he printed off this list of all of the previous mail order customers. And we got quite a few orders actually back in the post, because a lot of people used to just send them back with the check, because that was the type of people who would do the mail. You see, they bought by mail, they sent a check by mail. They, you know, that was how it worked with the mail one-to-one customers, right? The retail customers. So we sent these letters out one day, and this gentleman called the next day. And I was thinking, oh, he's going to, you know, place an order or whatever. And we answered the phone, or I answered it actually. And this chap, he says, it's Mr. Davis here. And I said, oh, hello, Mr. Davis. How can I help you? And he said, you've sent me a letter and you've addressed me as a doctor, and I'm not a doctor. My name's Mr. Davis. And what do you think you're doing? Take me off your mailing list. My neighbors are going to think I'm some sort of criminal, you know? So I said, oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Davis. We will remove you from the list straight away. So then the next day, phone rings. Hello there, it's Mr. Davis here. I've told you before, take me off your bloody list, he said to me, right? This chap, yeah? So I've got the phone again. I said, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Davis. I said, I don't know quite what happened there. There must be some sort of clerical error. So then I said, well, make sure that you don't get any more of these letters. So we put the phone down, and then had a chat with the chap, Michael. I said, Michael, look, you've sent this letter to this gentleman. He's not a doctor. He's Mr. Davis. So by this point, I was kind of like, okay. Next day, phone rings. It's Mr. Davis here. What the bloody hell do you think you're doing sending me this damn thing? My neighbours are going to think I'm a bloody con man and all this. So I said, one moment, sir. I will just put you on to the chap dealing with who sent you this letter in haste. So I've transferred the call over to this chap, Michael. And I'm looking at my dad, who's sitting opposite me at this desk opposite me. And I said, Michael, it's Dr. Davis for you. And all you can hear is literally the phone's this far away from his ear. And this guy is just going, what the bloody hell do you think you're doing? Just giving him grief completely. And yeah, and me and my dad, we just looked at each other, and we were really trying not to cry. It was just one of those moments. Do you know what I mean? But it is so easy to make these mistakes, and that's why, you know, when I go through all of my mailing lists, yeah, and if I decide I'm going to actually mail people, I need to clean it up. And that goes for everyone, even people who are building a mailing list from scratch, right? Like you need to look at the name, look at the email. You need to see if they've put a small letter at the beginning of their name, yeah? And out of respect, you need to change that, right? And do you know what I mean? And yeah. It just goes about saying, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. One of the things about GDPR is that, like, the collecting of relevant data. If you're running a newsletter, a mail list, like a newsletter for a blog, like mm-hmm. for example,
yeah.
you only need the email and maybe the first name.
Exactly.
Whether they're a doctor or not, who cares?
Exactly.
What age they are. Oh, do you know what I mean? You're like, what the minimum amount of data you need to do that job?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you need to prove that it's secure, right?
Yeah.
You need to have a secure connection. So your website needs to be on HTTPS, right?
Definitely.
That's HTTP, yeah. Because Google rankings, Google's going to hit you with rankings on that.
Started,
yeah, it has. Yeah, and I've wasted a lot of time trying to get my site sorted. Thanks, someone hacked me and killed my site, so I had to do it all again and go through the whole HT access file. And so I went through all that again. But it's a great feeling to know that if someone kills your site, that you can actually rebuild it very quickly. And that's a really good. It's like I wouldn't turn back the clock. Good. I'm pleased this happened because actually. It gives you an understanding of the vulnerabilities that you have, basically. I think that's really important. And that goes for data breach. You need to notify people, don't you, very, very quickly.
There's a whole thing on the ICO website about how to report data. And you've got 72 hours. It doesn't matter if it's 5:30 on a Friday night and you don't get in the office on Monday, you have 72 hours to report it to everybody.
Yeah.
And I mean, that whole cybersecurity edge of GDPR is something you need to speak to about if that's a risk.
Like if that's a risk.
Like for me and you who have, you know, solo businesses, so to speak, we'll get hacked, but I don't have any data. I don't have anything interesting on anybody.
Neither do I. It's like you want to waste your time looking at what we've got. It's like, why would you bother? Like, it's just such a waste of time, isn't it?
I don't even email people through a list, so I've got the least worthwhile hack on the planet. But you know, like recruitment agencies, we've got quite a lot of data. Doctor surgeries, anything financial, you've got to look at the cyber security.
Yeah, well, it's massive, and it's massive. And if anyone wants some information on someone who can help them with that, I know someone who's 8 times CISO. I'll be happy to make some introductions. So I'm not going to mention his name. Because like I don't want to jinx my security. It seems to be okay right now. Like seriously, like I just don't need a headache with it. Yeah, you know. But I think it's been really interesting, Tim, to speak with you. And you know, I think getting back to basics is definitely what it's all about with marketing. You know, and actually treat people as they should be treated. Right? Just you know, they're human, aren't they? At the end of the day. Yeah. And if we try and make things interesting, we try and make things fun, and we try and just be ourselves, right? And that goes for businesses, goes for people. Then we're on to a winner, aren't we? At the end of the day,
that's it. I think our whole chat can be summed up in one quote, and it's kind of marketing is at its best when it's a simple idea just really well executed, and that's it. That's all you have to do.
I'll go with that. So I will be putting an opt-in on my site. I'm hoping it's going to be in the next few days, but I'm going to get this live on there anyway. So, you know, and a lot of my visitors are actually from social. Like I get about 50% visitors from social, but I only just relisted my site with Google. So give it a few weeks and I think the organic will go up.
Yeah.
The social will go up. And actually the email will go down momentarily until I build that up again, you know.
Sure.
But I'm going to give away the first chapter of my book. So that's what I'm going to be doing to build my list. And then people will get that. If they don't want to read it, fine, but they're going to get that. And then there'll be podcasts probably every week, maybe every, I've got a lot that's still in the pipeline, but I think this is important to get this one live. So I'll get it out there. But if people want you, how do they find you, Tim?
I'm slightly old school. At Tim Elliott UK on Twitter is probably the best way. If you don't like Twitter, I'm at Tim Elliott UK on all the other stuff. Let's just have a chat on there.
All right, cool. And you can always get me, natschooler.com. Thanks, Tim. I'm going to just stop this recording.